Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Live from Capital One Arena ahead of Game 5 of Caps Canes tonight. Locals trying to stave off elimination. We're Grant and Danny, brought to you by the law firm Condori and Murad. They'll get you squared away on your last will and testament, set up a living trust, put together a medical power of attorney. This is stuff you do like 40, 50 years from now. This is stuff you got to get done now. It's not fun, but they'll make it easy. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today. Go to kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. They'll be opening the gates here at Capital One Arena within the hour, and fans will be pouring in to our setup. We're at sections 103 and 104. I can smell some fryers that got turned on.
They just went right when they first get fired up.
It's one of my spidey senses.
Yeah.
And I can smell some popcorn around the bend as well.
Well, it's not even around the bend. It's maybe, what, 12 feet from behind Ryan? That's popcorn right there.
Oh, that's where it is.
That's what popcorn is.
Yeah,
that smell, it's the most intoxicating smell. I think that's what perfume should be. It should be popcorn. We should have one that's banana bread, one that's chocolate chip cookies. I'm all about it.
In a world where I were to go purchase a bucket of popcorn, and I'm not going to, but in a world where I was going to purchase a bucket of popcorn,
okay,
and then I sat it right here next to me on the table,
mm-hmm,
still a couple feet away from where the people will come up and greet us and say hello, would anyone reach into that bucket of popcorn and eat any of it?
Now, before, what month was that? October? Before October 2024, I would have said, nobody is going to reach all the way over so many objects into your half-eaten bowl of popcorn and take any from you. That would never happen. I have seen it happen. I've watched it with my own eyes. I have seen that incident, and it changed me. So the answer to that, my friend, is yes, somebody would do that.
It has happened before. Do you see that there's a book coming out that Seth Wickersham wrote?
Oh, buddy.
I tell you what, if Seth Wickersham comes calling, I might just not answer that phone. If I am, and he's an unbelievable journalist.
He's
and
really
reporter.
Good. Yeah, he's such a good writer.
But boy, if everything he writes doesn't become bombshells. I mean, he is a stud in that way. But the reporting is that via the book that he's writing that's about to drop, Caleb Williams sought his way around going to the Chicago Bears. Remember all the reports last year that came out?
Oh, yeah.
Caleb Williams and his dad didn't want to go to Chicago, and they're trying to reinvent the draft, and they don't want to be a part of the draft process. And everyone just kind of yelled at the media, said they made everything up. That wasn't true. Caleb went to the Bears. No issues here. Remember all that?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, there was actually some agitating. So this is from an ESPN excerpt of the book that's coming out. Quarterback Caleb Williams was so concerned about being picked by the Chicago Bears last year that he and his family weighed blowing up the entire NFL draft, consulting with lawyers to figure out a way around the league's CBA while considering signing with the United Football League. Details from a forthcoming book reveal. Quote, Chicago is the place quarterbacks go to die. Well, Carl Williams, Caleb's father, told Seth Wickersham, author of American Kings. It's a biography of the quarterback. He told him this in the months leading up to the draft, that Chicago is where quarterbacks go to die, and he didn't want his son to play there. I'll continue to read here. Again, this is excerpt, ESPN.com. I need to go to the Vikings, Caleb Williams told his father before the draft last year. Let's do it, his father replied. But both Caleb and his dad, Carl, knew that a trade to a division rival was extremely unlikely. There is no chance the Bears were given the number one pick to the Minnesota Vikings.
No, you kidding?
Bears GM Ryan Poles stood firm, telling Williams, we're drafting you no matter what you say. You can't do anything to make us not draft you, just so you know. That left one option, to publicly attack the Bears and the city of Chicago, hoping that it would make the situation so untenable, similar to Jack and John Elway back in the 80s in 1983, that they would pass on him. The Williamses decided not to do that. Quote, he's worried about me taking bullets, Carl Williams told Wickersham of his son. I don't care. I just don't agree with this S, you know? I'm more interested in making sure that he can do what he wants to do. Caleb was concerned, correctly, that if they did try to make the Bears not want them by agitating publicly, and then they still drafted him, that it would make a bad situation even worse. But I love the idea that he's referring to it to going to Chicago, which has happened, as a bad situation. In the end, Caleb Williams told Wickersham, I wasn't ready to nuke the city. Well, that's nice.
Holy hell.
I want to know what the reaction in Chicago is to this. He's played one season, not a particularly good season. Their offensive coordinator summarily got fired. Their head coach has already been dismissed. They went and got one of the great offensive minds in the league, Ben Johnson alert. He's the new head coach in Chicago, responsible for getting the best out of Caleb Williams. And maybe because of that, he's happier to be there. I'm quite sure that he is. Plus, you built some bonds in the locker room. You got buddies, whatever. But if this doesn't tell you everything you need to know, number one, all of the swirling stuff about Caleb Williams last year that everybody was so dismissive of after the draft, send your apologies to wherever you need to, because you were wrong and they were right. That's number one. And number two, my goodness.
Oh, buddy.
The Bears have themselves a bit of a sticky wicket, a little fire to put out here in the offseason.
See, and here's the thing. He's not wrong talking about Caleb Williams.
Nope.
He saw that from a mile away. This is where quarterbacks go to die. By the way, what a line. Because they've been on the same search that we have. They've been on the same odyssey that we have for decades.
Well, you saw the line that everybody, you know, used the same unfunny joke. I think 800 people tweeted, Chicago got a Pope before a 4,000-yard quarterback. They have not had a 4,000-yard quarterback in their history.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins, who everybody hated here for some reason, did that getting out of bed the first time he ever started. You know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't be something in your entire history that you can't do.
There's a handful of franchises that have had this perennial, it never works for us. We are always super desperate, and nothing ever good can happen. Washington was one, Cleveland, Detroit to a degree, and Chicago. That's kind of your group, and there's a reason they've always been down at the bottom for the most part. The occasional flare-up of goodness over, you know, several decades. So he looks at the situation where a lame duck head coach that's on the firing line already, a bad offensive coordinator that should never have been hired. He's dead right about that situation. Chicago's right that, sorry, dude, you're the difference maker. We're taking you no matter what. You can tap dance and try to duck and dodge and dip and dodge. We got the rights. We own it. You're the number one pick, and you're coming here. You're going to be the catalyst for the change.
But you can just see it. So they start with, we're going to change the draft forever. We're not allowing this. Let's hire lawyers. That doesn't go anywhere.
Woo-hoo.
So then they go, let's send you to the United Football League to play for Arlington.
Be a St. Louis Battle
DC
Hawk.
Defenders, Caleb Williams. And he goes, well, maybe that's not the best idea, Dad. He goes, okay, fine. Cooler heads prevail. So then they decide, Danny, you know what we're going to do? In his words, not mine, we're going to nuke Chicago. We're going to say all the terrible things that we can, all the awful things that we can come up with about the Bears, and they won't take us. And Caleb Williams says, but Pops, what if we say all that stuff about the Bears and they still draft me? And then everybody there hates my guts. And I've got to go play while I'm being booed constantly as a rookie because I've just run down the Italian sausage sandwich. What's the Chicago sandwich?
The Italian beef sandwich.
Italian beef sandwich.
Deep dish pizza sucks.
You know what the worst building in America is? The Sears Tower. You know what pizza I hate? Giordano's. I mean, he was just going to cut a promo like a heel wrestler.
The Green River on St. Patty's Day is lame.
But can you imagine doing all that? And then they still go, we're taking you. Sorry about your luck. Unbelievable.
The whole thing is a song.
I imagine because this stuff coming out in this book is a year old, basically, that now you let bygones be bygones. But I'm sure there are going to be fans that are annoyed by this. There are
100%
going to be fans whose feathers are ruffled. I wonder what the consensus reaction will be in Chicago.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm like, God, I need to lose weight. I don't look very good. And then someone waddles in and goes, God, you're fat. Ugh. Like, I don't love that you said it. All the fans think that about the Chicago Bears. They all think it, that Waldron was dumb, that shouldn't have been there. They all think that the only coach I'm blanking on, who's why is
Matt Eberflus.
Eberflus, thank you. That Eberflus shouldn't have been the head guy. they're all thinking that we've never had a good quarterback forever. No matter how hard we've tried, it's never worked out. And this is the place the quarterbacks go to die. They know all the bad stuff about their own team.
But
they're aware of it.
To say that.
But you don't say it yet. You don't get to do it yet. And that's all it is. That to me is how it would go. So they'll be like, he's right, but please don't say that. Please come in here and be a competitor, be a difference maker. Please don't try to nuke the entire draft process because you don't want to go play in Chicago like Elway did to the Colts back in the day.
I would imagine that all that has to happen to let the dust settle on this is he just has to play well. And last year he flashed. There were certainly moments.
Those are the great moments.
He's so talented. I mean, the skill set, when you're talking about arm strength, athleticism, mobility, play extension, it's all there. The faders are turned up above average on almost every single trade.
Now, I mean, we saw it firsthand. Not the first 45 minutes or so, but all of a sudden that fourth quarter when it was playmaking time,
yep,
they couldn't stop that guy.
Well, the first 45 minutes were a shebangus of epic proportion. I mean, that he was awful, I thought, in stretches that game.
Agreed.
Against the Commanders at home. But last year, you look at the numbers, they're not terrible.
Just a pretty decent little rookie season.
And this isn't the best way to do it with just the counting stats, but 20 touchdowns, 6 picks, 3,500 yards in 17 games. You can do a lot worse than that.
Yeah, we've seen that.
And I think it was a terrible coaching situation. You alluded to this a minute ago, what Bears fans may have thought. But for me, I thought the Waldron hire was not very good with Eberflus as a lame duck, like paired together those two. But Eberflus as a guy that shouldn't have kept his job, he like got a new haircut and then a little bit of a makeover, and they're like, actually, we like this version of you better. We'll give you one more run at this thing. They have since fired those guys, and I would go as far as to say if he can't make it work with Ben Johnson, then he's not going to make it work. So I now love the coaching situation for him. We overrated maybe the situation around him from a playing standpoint last year, because I remember saying he's hooked, he's lucky, he's got a better situation than Jaden or anybody else. And the fact is the O-line was not as good as I thought it was going to be. They were terrible.
Yep.
But they fixed that. They've got new starting guards at both guard spots and a center. They've reworked all 60% of the interior of the offensive line. So I love that. Plus the weaponry with old Keenan Allen and Adunze wasn't quite as quick to develop as I thought. It just wasn't what I anticipated it being. However, fast forward here. Now that you got Ben Johnson, I think you got a chance to make some sweet music pretty quickly.
Here. Just everything will be better. There's more speed. There's more design. There's more, taking advantage of certain things. Just sort of felt like the offense for most of the time you'd watch them is, all right, Caleb, good luck, buddy. Go make something happen. I mean, he had almost 500 yards rushing, too, as a rookie. He doesn't really love to run the football. He scrambles to pass. But, again, a really talented player with a huge amount of upside. So, you're right. Now's the time here to put up or shut up. But this book coming out doesn't sound like it's going to make it any easier.
Caps, Canes tonight. We're at Capital One Arena. Gates are going to open about 40 minutes from now. We're looking forward to seeing you guys as you get into the building. So, if you're on your way down to D.C., come say hello. We're in sections 103 and 104. Next, we're going to get some insight into some of the changes that Spencer Carberry is making tonight on the lines and what the Caps have to do to try to reverse their fortunes facing elimination. You're listening to Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Game 5 from Capital One Arena. Third home game of the series for the Caps and the Canes. Washington looking for home win number 2 to keep their season alive here in this barn in this round. Caps playoff coverage is brought to you on Grant and Danny by Ace Trim Carpentry. For over 25 years, Ace Trim has been a trusted trade partner for new home builders in the DMV. They specialize in full-service interior trim carpentry, handling everything from supply to installation, turnkey and hassle-free. Contact acetrim.com today. Ace Trim, the home builders trade partner. Right now, we are pleased to have on the program the regional writer covering the Caps for NHL.com, Tom Galitti, who covers all of the National Hockey League. And Tom, thanks for a few minutes out here at Capital One Arena. Get a little national perspective on this evening's festivities. Give us your thoughts on this series so far. Caps find themselves in a pretty big 3-1 hole. How have we gotten here?
I think it really just starts with they've had so much trouble with the Hurricanes forecheck that they have spent a lot of time defending and not a lot of time just to create offense. So they haven't had scored a lot of goals. I think only scored 3 5-on-5 goals in the entire series. They're when they are getting chances, Frederik Andersen's been really good, so they haven't been able to finish. Hurricanes have just kept coming in waves with them, and at times the Capitals have been able to handle it, but not enough to. Let's put them in a situation where they're down 3-1 here.
Impossible to prove and impossible to know. But in your expert opinion, how would Washington fare if they were playing either Toronto or Florida right now?
They played both those teams well this year. I think it's a little different in the regular season than the playoffs because teams can pinpoint your weaknesses. I think Florida plays a very similar to the Canes with as far as their forecheck. They really wear teams down with their forecheck, so they might have had trouble with that. I think they might have. The Maple Leafs might be in a different heavy series where the Capitals can play their kind of game and play in their end maybe more. That's what the Capitals need to do to win this year. They need to be more in Carolina's end so they're not putting as much pressure in their in the defensive zone, obviously.
And, Tom, how do they get there? Like, that's the result. What's the process that leads to that?
They just need to have cleaner breakouts. I mean, they've done it at times. They started the first last two games. I thought they did a really good job of getting out of their zone quickly in their breakouts and making plays in transition to score, get scoring chances at the other end. They didn't finish. And then when you saw last game, first period there, they started the first 10 minutes really well, and then there was just one shift where they couldn't get the puck out four straight times. They had times to get it out, they couldn't get out, and eventually led in the first goal. So, but the first goal by Shane Gostisbehere. So they just need to, I think, playing with a lead would help a lot, but obviously that means converting on the chances that they had early.
So I think the story of this series is twofold. One, what you're talking about, which is this was my fear coming into this, just the way Carolina plays and all the Washington playoff games I've lost years of my life to over those years is they can't get out of their own end. Every zone exit feels like climbing Mount Everest. But then two, when the Caps have had the run of play, they haven't scored many goals. I don't know what another way to say it than that, but A, maybe how does that change? But B, why haven't they been able to pot one or two?
I think it's one, there's less time in the offensive zone. We talked about that already. Yeah. Two, I think they haven't gotten enough traffic pucks to the net. They're averaging less than 20 shots on goal a game. Part of that is because they're defending, but I think they're not shooting enough. They're not getting guys. You've seen in the playoffs how some of these goals are scored that go off either the other team's player in front or your own team's player in front, and it's a lot of one and done for the Capitals, not rebound chances. I think maybe a little simplification in the offensive zone. Again, one of the things where if you get one to go in against Frederik Andersen, maybe your confidence goes up. They've been chasing these games other than game. The first two games at home, I think they played. They had a lead in those games, and game two was their best as far as getting a lead and playing with it. But they just need to not be chasing a game the whole time.
Tom Galitti is with us on Grant and Danny. We're live at Capital One Arena in the main concourse. When you come in, say what's up, sections 103 and 104. He's the regional writer for NHL.com covering this Caps Kane series. How do you feel Alex Ovechkin's played in this series?
It's been a tough series. I think they're playing, especially in the games in Carolina. They're matching Stahl's line against them. They have Jacob Slavin, who's one of the best shutdown defensemen.
He is so good, by the way.
Yeah, so he's playing it. He's seeing that. The first period, first period of game three, that was not the matchup. They tried to go against Dubois' line, and Ovechkin had some of his best chances in the first period of that game. They did not score. Then they switched it back to having Stahl on them, and it's just really hard. And one of the other problems is their power play, and he's part of that. Their power play has not been producing, so other than that 5-on-3 goal he scored last game, which is a different situation, they're not getting set up. And a lot of his confidence or a lot of his game, you score a goal in the power play leads to other success otherwise.
You mentioned Slavin. I fell in love with, he's a great player, and I've liked his game for a long time, but he's a Hurricane, and it's annoying, and I kind of hate his guts. But I fell in love with him for the first time when he was representing me for Team USA at the Four Nations, which I know you covered. But Slavin is he's such a good player. I mean, what does he do so well? It seems like he's just got a length and a stick that no one else has.
All those things, shuts down plays with his stick, just is, closing on defense, on forwards, just does not give you room. And like you said, because of his length, I've seen him do it to many players. Alex Ovechkin, a couple of years ago, they played against Jack Hughes, and I think Jack Hughes didn't even have it. I think he had in the games, even strength, he had nothing. He had two shots on goal the entire series. It's just the way he's able to cover ground. He's just so smart. and understands the game so well. He's up to close on plays and gives you no room.
What do you make of Carberry switching lines up here a lot? For me, it's a thank God they're doing something. I know people can maybe view that as a panic move. And well, I'm already, it's easy for me because I got nothing on the line, but I'm already panicked. I've watched these first four games and I go, do something. What do you make of that?
I mean, I don't know if it's a panic move, but I think it just makes sense. So they haven't not been creating offense. They have, like I said, they have two 5-on-5 goals from forwards, and that was Protas in game one and McMichael in game two. So they're trying to find something. They haven't gotten anything from the bottom of their lineup. Their third line really hasn't been on and off the season, really has been kind of like their problem as far as their line. So they're going to try. You know, McMichael's played center before, most of his career before this year, he became a wing. So, and he played a little bit this year, and they're just, you know, making a move there, put him in the center, see if they can get something going on with Mangiapane and Ryan Leonard, the rookie. You know, Lars Eller has been there, but, you know, it's just that line has not been producing. So, tough decision for, you know, when you sit a player like that who's meant a lot to this organization, but these are the decisions you have to make at this time of the year. And when you're down 3-1, you can't wait for, you know, we're going to wait till you can't, this is the time to make a change if you're going to make a change. Like
Tom Galitti of NHL.com with us on Grant and Danny. I'm fascinated by the line you just referenced with McMichael going 3LC now, Mangiapane, McMichael, and Leonard. I think it's a small line. No doubt about that. They're 5'9 or smaller, maybe. I don't know. But it's also maybe the fastest line the Capitals have had in terms of straight skating all season. What does that look like tonight? Like, how do you think Carberry with last change tries to match up, and what might he look for in terms of, you know, the adversary for that line to help them the most? Because they could struggle, I would imagine, defensively with a lack of size.
It's a good question. I don't know. I think they will have, you know, I think they were kind of controlling where that line was playing anyway. I think it went from, you know, when you look at the Capitals, their third line really has been their fourth line. The fourth, you know, Nick Dowd's line is the fourth line, but they play more. They play situationally. They get matched against other teams, you know, first or second line, depending on who they're playing. So, you know, so this line, I think they're looking for just a little more offense out of it. And maybe he will put them in some situations where they succeed with maybe some offensive zone starts instead of, you know, having to start in a D zone and worry about, you know, who they're matched against. Like you said, being at home does give some advantage as far as their size and like their speed. Maybe they can get the Hurricanes on their heels instead of being the other way around for, you know, much of this game.
Let's go to the positive side for Washington. Hard now they're down 3-1, and we've kind of mentioned the State of the Union here. Who's actually played better than we realized? Who's actually been pretty good this series?
I think Logan Thompson probably has played dropped off a little bit the last two games, but he was really good for them the first two games. The main reason why they probably got a split early. Tom Wilson has played, I think, pretty well, and the stats don't show it, but they don't show it for it. But his only 2 points came in that game two win, but he's been, you know. Game three, I think he had 11 hits or something like that. He's been Tom Wilson. When you watch Tom Wilson, what he does, that's what he does. Obviously, they'd like to, you know, he'd have liked to finish that chance right away in the first minute of game three. But I think he's been pretty good. Up and down, you know, it's been hard. I think you know, Trevor Rammuzak has done a good job in his role. You know, the defense has been stressed. You know, they're not really, you know, Alexander Alexiev has been playing in place of Martin Fervari. You know, didn't play basically in the third period last game, so they had to play. They played 5D. They've been, you know, it's a tough situation. I think the Fervari injury is something that didn't get enough attention at the time, and it's really been
they
definitely miss him. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Tom Galitti of NHL.com on Grant and Danny. We're live at Capital One Arena. So 58 times in all of the sports with the best of seven series, there's been a 3-1 deficit overcome. 58 in those sports, 14 in baseball, 13 in the NBA, and 31 in the NHL. So it's way more common in this sport. And that's because the Caps exist, obviously, because they gave up so many of those 3-1 leads, sadly. But, you know, just aside, there's this feeling of inevitability now. Like, you're down 3-1, you can't come back. I don't know that that's true, because you think about it tonight. If they were to find a way to win, now you're just somehow, some way win in Raleigh, which I know is difficult, and there's a game seven, and the pressure's back on them all of a sudden. It's not that crazy. You got to win the first one, and that's all you can worry about. But what's your big picture thought on kind of how cooked they are as opposed to how much life this group that has responded all year might have?
I think that they have life because they're playing at home tonight, and they're definitely a good home team, and they have the matchups, and they could, you know, they're looking at the simple part, win a game at home and worry about what comes up next. So I think they can do that. And like you said, it has happened in the league. The Capitals have done it twice themselves, but that's, you know, usually they're on the other end, like you said, but they've done it twice themselves. And they've had other times where they've gotten to a game seven when they were down 3-1. Even in 2017, it was a disappointing end, but against Pittsburgh, they're down 3-1. Everyone counted them out in that series, and all of a sudden it's 3-3, and then we know what happened then. But it's possible. You got to win the game at home and go from there. So get to 3-2. make them win a home game rather than make, you know, let them come in here and clinch the series, which is, I'm sure, is the approach tonight.
Yeah. Tom, thank you for joining us. I hope there are more Caps games for you to cover.
Yeah, we'll see. This. Hopefully, yeah.
Thank you, buddy.
Tom Galitti, NHL.com, with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan from Capital One Arena, where gates are going to open in about 20 minutes. Fans will start pouring in to the facility here. Come on by sections 103 and 104. You've been asking the question throughout the show today. What is the vibe going to be? Like, what's the crowd, the energy, the anticipation, the anxiety? You know, what are those things going to look like tonight for this fan base? And I've been at enough of these games to know there's a nervous energy, and there's almost this fear when something goes bad of, oh no, I knew it. Here it is. It's why I think it is vital, just pertinent, that they start fast tonight. Ideally, they score the first goal in the first period, and if they could score within the first 4, 5, 6 minutes, that would be a godsend. But just doing what they've done on the road, even if you're not scoring, where you come out, you carry play, you hit the post, you know, you're the team that's the aggressor, and you're up 5-6-1 in shots like they were in games 3 and 4. To me, that's how they've got to start.
Without a doubt. I mean, listen, they've gotten off to the hot starts that hasn't resulted in a ton of goals to this point. To me, it's got to be, and I hate being this overly simplified, but it's got to result in something. You know what I mean? Like, if they play well for 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, and it's 0-0 on the scoreboard, I think everyone's going to be going, oh, crap, here we go. The first turnover, the first time the puck stays deep in Washington zone for an extra 10 seconds, 15 seconds, they can't clear it, the whole place is going to gasp. You've got to come away with a result early, not just carry play, because they've carried play plenty of times in this series with next to nothing to show for it. You got to have something on the scoreboard.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Our NFL player is going to take part in the 2028 Olympics in L.A. What might that look like? And a famous animal actor that is no longer with us. That's next on G&D, live from Capital One Arena on The Fan.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Back live at Capital One Arena. Business is picking up. Starting to get a little busier. They haven't opened up the gates, but you can tell they're
about
to.
Yeah.
People that are working in the arena are making the rounds, and everyone's got a cart full of liquor, food, wheeling it around, getting everything set up. There's a scene in Rookie of the Year, which is a movie I'm sure you'll act like you've never seen.
No, they all confuse me. Is that the one where the kid has a great arm?
It's the one where, yes, he gets hurt, and then his surgically repaired arm allows him to throw 97 for the Cubs.
Henry Rowengardner?
That's correct.
Yeah.
In that movie, though, there's the opening of the film is like a stadium, a ballpark, Wrigley Field, being set up for action that day. So it's the popcorn kernels being popped and, you know, them printing out the programs. And it's just an awesome scene I always think about when I think of, you know, games that night. That's the vibe right now, though. It's like the merch people are walking around with the jerseys and the clicking of the hangers as they hang everything up. We're about ready for action here.
Yeah.
And the gates are going to fly open whether they're ready or not in the next 15 minutes. Happy Gilmore.
Yes.
Chubbs gets his hand bitten off by an alligator.
Uh-huh.
That alligator?
Yeah.
Died.
No way.
Yes.
That's famous. Amazing he was still alive. I guess alligators live a long time.
I suppose so. Yeah. Famous alligator.
Huh. How about
actor
that?
Actor alligator. Apparently he was in other films. But this is ABC News last night. An alligator that appeared in numerous TV shows and films over 30 years. Most notably, the 1996 Adam Sandler comedy Happy Gilmore.
See,
has died at a gator farm in southern Colorado.
Does he have, first of all, gator farm sounds ominous. Does he have an IMDb page? Like, has this guy been in stuff?
Got an agent? Right? I mean, I'd imagine if I did a little more research. He weighed 640 pounds.
Yeah, he did.
That gator. That's 290 kilograms.
Oh, I was going to ask you the conversion. You know. Thanks for giving me that. Dude, so you figure he's not like a toddler at the time of Happy Gilmore. He's a full-size gator.
Yeah.
That's 30 years ago, basically.
Right. I mean, he's been in projects.
That's a person's lifespan.
Do you know how old he was?
I don't, so I didn't look. I don't know. I figure, what is he, probably 20 at the time? Is in his prime? Is he? I would say 55.
They don't know his exact age.
Okay.
But they're speculating. They're saying his name's Morris, by the way.
Morris.
Morris the alligator. Morris, Morris the alligator was at least 80 years old.
80?
80. He has died at the ripe old age of 80 plus. I'm trying to see if there's any other. Oh, look, we got some other things he was in. You ready for this?
Here we go.
See if you recognize him. He was sent to the Colorado Gator Farm in 2006. That's when he retired from acting. He started his Hollywood career in 1975.
What?
So from 75 to 2006, he was in films and TV shows. He appeared in several movies, including Interview with the Vampire.
Come on.
Dr. Doolittle 2. Blues Brothers 2000. He was in Blues Brothers 2000. What a career this guy had.
What?
Morris was silly. He also appeared on Coach. You sleep.
Dude, name the college the coach coached at.
I don't remember.
The Minnesota State Screaming Eagles. Yeah. The Minnesota State Screaming Eagles.
Night Court. Come on. I don't know about that one.
Dude, Night Court was a smash back in the day.
And he even made an appearance. He was my rival. I was a Letterman guy. He made an appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Oh, wow. So you have a gator here today. I thought,
That's pretty good. Yeah. Featured it when Steve Irwin brought him out on the show.
Oh, okay.
I don't even think him and Steve Irwin had much of a relationship, but Steve Irwin in this particular situation brought him out on stage to be shown off on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
No, I like my gator with one of handbags. Hey. That's wild, dude. I can't believe it. First of all, you glossed over Interview with the Vampire. When the hell was he in Interview with the Vampire?
I can't help you with that.
The Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, little Kirsten Dunst, Christian Slater, just sort of acting around like that.
Christian Slater's best role was in?
Interview with the Vampire.
Wrong. I was looking for Robin Hood. No. I was looking for.
He's really good in Robin Hood. I'll bet that.
How good is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
It's excellent. It's excellent.
Now, Kevin Costner.
See, I thought you were going to do a Nubs bit where he came in at the end of a kid's movie and it was Nubs.
No.
That's a good one. I'll give you that one.
Kevin Costner in Robin Hood, even though his accent comes and goes the entire movie.
It's tough.
It's bad.
Kevin Costner's wonderful. Man, that was hard.
Kevin Costner's great, but he has the range of Jahidi White. And this guy is only going to operate right around the rim. Morris the Alligator. Number one role, Happy Gilmore, most known for that.
I can't
Happy
believe that.
Happy Trails, my guy. We have decided to get Morris taxidermied so that he can continue to scare children for years to come. It's what he would have wanted, the farm posted on Facebook. It's kind of a great bit.
How do they know what he wants? He's 80.
I don't know. Literally have a relationship with him. They're literally with him every day.
He can't. He's an alligator. He's a predator.
Right. I think that's their exact point.
Yeah.
Taxidermy him. Kids get bothered by him. That was what he lived to do.
I guess that's true. He lived to terrify.
Right.
But I'm going to ask you questions you don't know. Like you found the article.
It's one of your favorite things, yeah.
And I hate that I'm doing this.
Go for it.
How does, like, there's a before that alligator's in movies. You follow me? So someone's going to go, casting director, I need an alligator. Let's have an audition process. Let's have a locate. Let's somebody search for the perfect alligator. And then it's like now once he's been in something, they go, okay, we need an alligator. Go hire Morris.
So I actually do know the answer to this because my buddy is.
No, you don't.
He's in charge of the alligator booking agency in L.A. So I actually have a file on this.
This is.
It's the ABA. It's the alligator booking agency.
The ABA.
So number one, size. It's about size. He was 600 pounds. He was a gigantic alligator. That's what they're looking for. There's an aesthetic there. Number two, it's about personality. He was not a docile alligator, but he could be trusted. He was friendly. He was endearing. He was never going to attack or eat, but he looked kind of menacing and scary.
So he's on the bigger side. The average alligator is an 11-foot alligator. That's your average, because Morris is a dude alligator.
Yeah.
500 pounds. So 640 is big.
That's what I'm saying. They wanted an alligator that looked big and menacing. Most alligator roles in movies, you don't want a small baby little nothing burger alligator. You want an alligator to be scary. So that was a big part of it. But I also think his demeanor was critical. He enjoyed scaring children.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard that from the Facebook post. So anyway, wow. I've been thinking a lot about Morris lately, and I just wanted to say thanks for the memories to him.
What a life to Morris the acting alligator. Seriously, man.
He crushed it.
What an unbelievable journey he went on. Just probably chilling out in some nub swamp in the middle of nowhere. And he's like, you know what? I'm gonna be in more movies than 99.9% of actors ever to live.
Gosh.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a wild career.
What a life. Real quick, the NFL has a memo out for their next owners' meetings that are coming up where they're gonna vote on the ability for players to take part in the 2028 Summer Olympics. Now, if you're wondering, wait a second, football, Olympics, not a thing. Remember, flag football is coming to the Olympics in L.A. in 2028. Several players have come out, Tyreek Hill among them, and said they want to participate. They would love to be on the American flag football team to whoop up on everybody and win a gold medal. We just saw the basketball team win a gold medal for the Americans. Baseball players like Bryce Harper came out after that saying, I would love to participate in the Olympics. Well, football players want a piece too.
Love it.
I don't think they'll get voted and passed on this. I'd imagine owners who currently have the power to say, we're not going to do it. We're not going to risk a torn ACL or a torn Achilles for somebody, you know, in the summer before a season. So no, thank you. But I think it would be great for the game. Look how much a benefit and a boost for basketball the United States of America's roster was in these Olympics.
If the NFL is smart, and I believe the NFL happens to be smart, Chiefs, they're going to go and say that exact same thing. Because where is the next vein for them to tap? Where's the next ore mine for them? It's global. What better way to make your game global than to have your stars go global, right? To have games that are broadcast to the world. Now, you can't do the regular season NFL type stuff, but the next best thing is take some of your stars and put them in this thing and have them dominate. Absolutely, that would be a catalyst for, hey, come see Olympic hero, I'm just making this one up, Olympic hero Tyreek Hill when they play in Barcelona next year. I'm just making up a game that could happen. Mm. It's like, come see them in the Rhine, Germany. It'll be a great time. Or whatever. That's what you do. I would love it. I don't know if that'll happen, but I would love that.
Yeah. I hope it happens. I think it would be great for the sport. You're right. It is a priority right now for the National Football League to spread their tentacles internationally. That goes without saying. Just look at the Madrid-Spain game Washington's playing in and the amount of these games internationally that are happening. So there's some want to there, but the fear of an injury in football, I think, is just so substantial.
Oh, without a doubt.
And even in basketball, a contact sport, it's not that common that serious injuries, like, and I say this right after Jason Tatum ruptured an Achilles, but in those international games, I can't really think of examples where we've seen that. This would be the risk of, it's one false step, it's one non-contact injury, and we're talking about the best players in the league participating, right. And it's skill guys. It's Justin Jefferson making 35 mil, Tyreek Hill making 28 mil, you know, Patrick Mahomes wants the quarterback the thing. What if one guy falls at your legs? I just don't see teams wanting their guys to do it, but I'll be monitoring this closely because I think it would be amazing to watch those guys playing flag football. All right, next on Grant and Danny, we've got our Caps to score a goal draft. We'll get you ready for puck drop. It is game 5 tonight for the Caps and the Canes out here at Capital One Arena. A Carolina win and the season ends. But if Washington can get a dub, they're going back to Raleigh with a chance to force a game 7. A monumental night on 7th and F Streets. Grant and Danny taking you up to pregame at 6:30 right here on The Fan.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.